Welcome to On The Mic Podcast. I am your host, Tim Drake. On the show today, I have the lovely and talented comedian Melissa Merlot. Melissa is a comic out of Salt Lake City, Utah. I got to know Melissa over the last few months, primarily through social media. We connected through Twitter and Facebook, through a lot of our mutual comic friends. And we've been talking about doing this interview for a number of months now, and finally we're able to get our schedule synced up where we were able to sit down and get things going. Most recently, Melissa won the 2013 Artie Award from City Weekly for Best Local Comedian. So it was cool to talk to her, learn about how that whole process goes, and learn a little bit more about her career, how she started, and some of her upcoming shows, as well as learning that she writes poetry. I never would have guessed that. So it was really cool to learn a lot more about her. As you may notice, my throat's getting a little raspy right now. It's been getting a little cold here in Utah, and I started to kind of come down with the cold. Just the other morning, we got hit by a random freak snowstorm that Melissa and I kind of talk about towards the end of the show, because both of us just despise the cold, which, you know, makes sense of why we live in Utah. It's getting to me a little bit. So I've spent the day kind of lounging around in the studio, taking care of business, and oddly reliving my high school years, rewatching all of the Jackass movies. I found out that I'm meeting Steve-O tomorrow, so I thought I should probably refresh my mind of his work and forgot how just insane these movies are. So, and it's nice too to relive the memory of Ryan Dunn, who was a cast member of Jackass, did pass away. And while I've been a little under the weather, it's at least been good to have some good fun, watch some good comedy while I'm sitting here at home. So everybody enjoy this episode with comedian Melissa Merlot. Follow the show on Twitter, at On The Mic Podcast. We're also up on Facebook now, as On The Mic with Tim Drake. And you can also visit the website, onthemicpodcast.com. So check that out. We will have some new merch coming along. You can also order my book on there from My House on the Moon that I wrote with my co-host of My House on the Moon, Jordan Ayer. So make sure to check that out. And here's the interview with Melissa Merlot. Enjoy. So I'm glad you're finally able to make it down. I know we've kind of connected on Twitter and Facebook for several months now.
For a while. I've been like, yeah, I need to do that. Yeah, we should have you on. Yeah. It just never works out.
Yeah. So, well, congratulations right off the bat on your Artie Award.
Thank you so much. I'm really thrilled.
Yeah, that was
a huge honor for me to win that.
Yeah, I heard about it when I was still out in LA.
Uh-huh.
So, and I was like, that is like one of the toughest competitions right there with you, Jay, and Christian.
I know, the three of us. It's like, and the one thing I was really happy about is I love Christian Piper, I love Jay Whitaker, so I was like, this is awesome. You know, like, no matter who wins, I'm going to be happy. It's not going to be like me being bitter, like, oh my god, I can't believe they won! Which could happen with some other people, but it was really cool that it was the three of us, and we were all really cool about it with each other. Like, I was the first one to see all of us nominated, like, on the actual ballot.
Yeah.
And so I tweeted them on Twitter. I was like, you guys, we're the best of the best of the best. And they were like, what? No way. We were all just kind of, like, shocked that we actually got our names on that.
Now, how does that whole process go? I mean, I had actually never even heard of the Arties.
Oh, the Arties are really cool. City Weekly does them every year, and it's just for, like, every kind of art there is in Salt Lake. They just go out and new things, old things, anything. So it's like theater, performing arts, music, food even. So it's just a big wrap of everything.
Oh, cool.
And then they have ballot. So they have ones that are up for a vote. And that's the award I won, was the Reader's Choice Award. And then when they announce the winners for those, they also have like a Writer's Choice. And that's a bunch of other awards that they give out.
Gotcha.
That didn't do the have to go through the voting process. So I was really thrilled because that meant I won from, you know, a democracy, yeah. Right? So they just
you won
have
the popular vote.
Exactly. So that was really cool. So people voted. You can vote online or they have ballots that you just turn in. So it was cool.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah,
do they still
big
do the
honor.
Slammy Awards?
I do not know if they do or not.
The store I used to own years ago, we actually won a Slammy Award.
Oh, cool.
But I never saw them come around after that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think it was that special. It was... Especially because when we found out that we had won it, we realized the guy from City Weekly that had actually come to observe, we were the biggest asses to
him. Oh, no way.
He came to one of our after-hour shows that we did at the store that we had on the mall.
Okay.
And we had Megan Dia.
Okay.
That was Dia Frampton from The Voice.
Yeah, yeah.
It was her original band.
Okay.
And then a couple other bands that have gone, by the way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was a big show. And this guy shows up and it's like, it's a ton of, like, high school kids, young college kids, and this dude that looks like Jerry Garcia.
Okay.
Like, he was a spitting image of Jerry Garcia. And we were like, who the hell is this? Like, he didn't tell us who he was. He just kind of walked
showed up.
In, just showed up. In his tie-dyed shirt and his beard. And, yeah, I mean, it was it was just weird. And we just kind of watched him, just observing everything. And we're like, do we need to call to catch a predator? Like,
yeah,
what is
this
happening?
Guy doing? Checking everything out.
And then
out.
He came up, like, right before that and asked us for a receipt. And we were like, you paid $5 cash at a concert. Like,
oh, yeah.
What
that's
you
a
need
business
a
expense.
And he still didn't tell us that. So we were just like, who the hell
he
is
was like,
this dude?
This weird guy.
It's now asking us for a
really
receipt.
Strict records.
So, and then, yeah, it was months later and we found out that we were nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, oh, and then we thought about it more like, oh, that dude that we were a dick to.
Yeah, that you're like, this guy's weird. Why is he here?
And
then you end up winning.
Yeah, and then we didn't think we had any chance in the world. We're like, oh, we were the sympathy vote and he was here.
Yeah,
so, and then we get there and we found out that we won. We're like, oh.
Yeah, you never know.
And it was cool because it was at the old Portocall.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
It's like they had like the full like open bar and
oh,
everything.
Oh, cool.
And
very cool.
I don't know how the Arties were. I saw some of
the
pictures you had posted.
Really
and they looked
fun.
Really, really
yeah,
good.
It was really nice. It was at the Utah Center for Contemporary Art. Can't remember the full name. It's Yumucca or something like that. Downtown Salt Lake next to the Salt Palace. I'm sorry if I'm screwing it up. It's something like that. It used to be called just the Art Center, and now it has some fancy name that I can't remember. But it was really nice. And
Yumucca sounds like another type of llama.
Yeah, exactly. Is that the Yumucca Llama Center? Now that would have been cool.
That would have been. So
I'd love to go to a llama center.
But see, if you went to it and it wasn't a Yumucca and it was an alpaca, then you'd have like the battle of the two people that...
That would be awesome.
I made that mistake one time.
They're not llamas, they're alpacas.
Yeah, and they are
different.
I mean, you think the Mac PC battle's bad. Call an alpaca a llama or vice versa.
They take it very seriously.
Yeah, it is a very, very serious offense. They spit on you, too.
Yes, yes.
So, well, you know, let's kind of go back here. I mean,
okay.
we talked Arties.
Sure.
So that's nice and present.
Yes, thank you.
So let's go back to young Melissa here.
Okay.
So before Cobra or anything like that.
Before Cobra.
So where did the Cobra come from?
I was just joking around at my day job about how cool it would be to have the name Cobra. And I was like, I'm going to make it my middle name, you guys. We'll be like, my middle name isn't Cobra for nothing. We just started using it all the time. This is at my day job, not with comedy. And then I was like, I'm going to integrate this into comedy, you know? So I put it on my Facebook and everybody just loved it. And I thought it was cool because it gave me the initials because it's Melissa Cobra Merlot.
Yeah.
Gave me the initials MC Merlot. So they're like hosting all the comedy shows. I was like, oh, this is perfect. So, yeah.
You should somehow like, just make a shirt of yourself.
Yeah, like, I know. Like, I puffed up like Cobra with like...
And just start selling that every time.
That would be so cool.
You'd be like the only comedian with a merch section, and it would be pretty.
Yeah, I could give out cobras with like my face on. Yeah. Little plastic cobras.
Your stage music as you walk up is that just na-na-na.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could really ham this up.
I plan to. I love snakes. This will be perfect.
So you know, as you were a young kid, what inspired you to start really getting into comedy and entertaining people?
I always loved comedy. I grew up with cable, so I watched a lot of stand-up, just like Evening at the Improv type mm-hmm. stuff. MTV used to have a stand-up special, like MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour. And I don't know, I just really liked it, but I never really thought about trying it until I got older. And then I started doing improv.
Okay.
And
like sketch yeah, groups,
like,
or just
like sketch group type cool. improv on stage. And I sucked. I was terrible at it. It just doesn't click with me. I don't know. But one of the guys in the improv group told me he didn't really like improv. He really wanted to do stand up. And I was like, oh, that would be so cool, but there's not anywhere, you know, in Salt Lake to do that. And he was like, oh, yeah, there is. There's this place called Wise Guys out in West Valley. And so he gave me, like, free passes. And so I got really excited and went to their open mic night. And
is this somebody that still is active in,
no,
like, the comedy
scene?
No,
he's not around anymore. I don't know what happened to him. Last I heard, he was a cab driver somewhere. But maybe he'll make a comeback, yeah, and be like, I was inspired after hearing Melissa Merlot's tale
it's gonna
of
be
when
one
I
of
gave
those,
her a free yeah. pass.
It'll be one of those YouTube stories of,
yeah.
of like Jim Gaffigan's going to get in the cab and be like, I discovered this guy.
Exactly.
He was eating a Hot Pocket.
So, yeah, I went out there and I was super nervous the first time I tried it. And I didn't let anybody I know go with me because I felt like no witnesses, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I suck, I never have to do it again. But it was something I had always wanted to do, so I felt like I had to do it. I didn't even let my boyfriend at the time go with me. I was like, no, no witnesses. So I go, and I sit up front, you know, so then all the other comedians, of course, are picking on me, like, oh, look at this girl here alone. I didn't even notice because I was super nervous, you know. I just sat there freaking out. And so then I went on stage, and I got a really good response. I mean, I wrote, like, all my jokes, and I was really confident with them, delivered them well. And it was great. Like, yeah. The first time I did, it was really great. And so then the second time I went to go do it, I invited, you know, people I knew, coworkers, friends, my boyfriend, everybody. I was like, come on out. And then I sucked. And it was totally crappy.
They're like, yeah, we've heard it before.
Yeah, exactly. We've been hearing these jokes forever, Melissa. This is not
I've
a big deal.
I've heard that's pretty common, though, that you do your first open mic, mm-hmm. you kill, and yep. then your second one, and you bomb.
Yeah, totally. I think it's, you just over-prepare maybe for the first one, you know,
yeah.
so it just really helps out.
And yeah, and then after you get
off
stage,
and then you get,
like,
cocky.
Ah,
yeah, you get cocky and confident because you're like, I was so good last time. And then you just nosedive.
Yeah, you're giving them the little Seinfeld
yeah,
jab.
Yeah, exactly. And no, it doesn't work like that.
Do you remember the first joke that you ever did?
Yeah, I do.
Well, what
it's
was
so
it?
Stupid. It's kind of not relevant anymore because of the housing situation now, but I thought it was so good, and it was a joke I had for a while, just like with my friends, and it was, I can't remember how I led into it, but the punchline was, you know, those houses that say, like, for sale by owner?
Yeah.
You used to see those signs way back when, before our housing problem now, but I wrote this bit about how I was feuding with my neighbor, and so I put a sign in their lawn that said, for sale by neighbor. Bazing! It's like so silly now, but that was the first joke I ever told on stage.
See, I can relate to that, though.
Yeah, so, like, when you have certain neighbors, yeah. you need to get rid of them, right?
when my wife and I had lived out in West Jordan a uh-huh. little while back, our entire street pretty much went up for sale.
Oh my God.
Except for one neighbor.
Yeah?
And this neighbor, I think they were just kind of socially...
awkward?
Yeah. Like, I think Asperger's was hereditary in that family.
That, like, sounds like a crazy family.
And, like, they meant well.
Okay.
They meant well, but I could never make it two sentences with mm-hmm. them without being like, yeah, you should be wearing a helmet. Like,
how do you go outside on your own? Do you have a monitor?
Like, it was, I remember the first day that we had moved in, we bought the house as a fixer-upper.
Oh, okay.
And we'd just torn out everything, put in, like, new hardwood mm-hmm. floors and everything.
Nice.
And all of a sudden I come, like, down to, like, our main entryway. And there's this kid just standing in our door, and I was just like, what the hell's going on here?
Oh,
like,
that's creepy, just standing there.
Everybody else
like
can see
movie.
Him too, right?
Yeah, is he a ghost? That's what I think of too.
And, like, I just kind of looked at him. I was just like, can I help you? And he's like, do you guys need help? And I was like, no. No, just...
Go away, creepy kid.
And then he just kind of kept standing there. And he's like, did you guys put in hardwood, huh?
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, yep. Like, why do you know what was in here before?
Okay, because whoever lived there before, he was probably just standing there, too, yeah. You know?
Well, to add to the creepiness, the guy that lived there before us was in, like, his 40s, and I found out later on that, like, our neighbor's kids would always just come over and play video games with them.
Oh, with a single 40-year-old man? Oh, totally normal.
Which,
right?
I'm pretty sure he was a heroin addict, too.
Oh, totally great place for the kids to go play video games.
When we went through our final walkthrough of this house,
oh my God.
He came running to the door. Mm-hmm. Like, we just didn't think anybody was home.
Yeah.
And he had a sock on one foot. And then, like, his other, like, foot was, like, all, like, gnarly looking. And I was like, I'm pretty sure he's shooting up right now.
In his foot?
Yeah, it was, like, shooting up between his toes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, go ahead. Look around the house.
And so, like...
I'll just be in the back room.
So as we finished looking around, we noticed in the top of, like, the cabinet, there's, like, one of those buckets for hypodermic needles.
Oh, my God. Like, the Sharps container?
Yeah. And we were just like, okay, like...
Well, at least he's disposing of them, you know, correctly.
Hopefully we don't get, like, killed when somebody mistakes this guy in a bad drug deal.
Oh, my gosh. That is really scary. I did move into an apartment that used to be owned by a drug dealer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was scared the crap out of me because I became friends with the neighbor, like, straight across the hall. And she told me that she could hear people coming at night to, like, kick down his door, basically. And I was like, oh, God, I hope they know he moved, right? And then I looked at the door frame, and the hinge was all bent, like it had been kicked in, and they didn't even fix it, you know, before they rented it out to someone else. But the cool thing is, there were really high ceilings in this apartment, okay? And the neighbor told me that this guy, not only was he a drug dealer, he also did magic. He was really into, like, Aleister Crowley and the Golden Dawn and all this weird stuff. And I was like, no way! So I searched the apartment for magic, like, paraphernalia, because I'm like, there's gotta be something here. And
finding, like, random rabbits placed throughout the apartment.
Exactly. So I'm, like, scavenging for stuff. And in one of the closets, there was a really high shelf that had all his magic stuff. And it was hilarious. It was all stuff to, like, keep you out of jail.
This is how you slip handcuffs.
Yeah, there were, like, these pictures of, like, jail with, like, no written across. And then there was a noose that was cut, like, you know, that symbolizes freedom. And I was like, this is so cool.
I think I know your neighbor.
Yeah! Oh my gosh, there is a noose here. For those listening, he just pulled it out. But see, it's not cut, so that's okay. That's a normal one. You cut it, and then that symbolizes freedom.
No, that was a movie prop from something that we shot, like, a year
ago.
Love
it.
So, right...
That's so awesome that you just have a random noose.
A random noose.
Just laying around, you know? Never know when you might need one, right?
Yeah, the worst part was, I remember when we bought that noose.
Where do you go to buy nooses?
It's right next to the gun and razor store.
Oh, dude, that's just sad. Do you have a big block of ice, too, that I can stand on?
In a chair, or a chair with a wobbly leg?
Yeah, or some kind
aisle
of
five.
Wonky chair. Aw, the sad store.
No, we'd gone to buy this rope, and we're standing in line at Home Depot.
Uh-huh.
And Jordan was with me, and he's sitting there just tying this noose.
Like, in line?
Yeah, in line. And so the guy goes to ring us up.
Make anyone suspicious.
Yeah, the guy goes to ring him up, and he just flops the noose down on the table.
Oh, my gosh. I can just imagine the cashier's face. Like,
oh, he was...
Oh, he goes, like, totally white.
He was troubled, and I just looked, and I was like, hi.
just find some room.
Yeah, just kind of stood there. Just,
yeah.
Yeah, he just kind of looked
at us. Renovation. That's all.
Yeah,
just improving my house, if you know what I mean.
He was ready to call somebody, and that's when Jordan finally would be like, we're just buying it for a movie prop. Like,
we're filming. Film students.
Like, don't
worry. Anytime
don't
you do
worry.
Something weird, always filming. Film students.
Yeah, we've got,
for a movie.
We have a movie that we're starting to shoot next week, uh-huh. But, like, I'm already worried that something bad is going
uh-oh,
to happen.
Uh-oh.
That somebody, just because... It's a really intense movie,
oh,
and
cool.
It involves a gun scene.
Oh, nice.
in South Salt Lake is where we're shooting it.
Oh, you're gonna have so many cops.
So like we're just like, okay, we know we need to go about this right,
uh-huh.
but we know that somebody's still going to call the cops on us.
You got a gun!
Because I mean, like we're the South City campus, Salt Lake Community College. Is okay. At. So like we're gonna be shooting right over there, but right up the street from there, you have those like string of hotels.
Oh yeah,
that are just like the little dumpy ones that like
Spiking Tourist Lounge.
That you would expect Dexter to be at, like inspecting a crime scene.
Super creepy hotels.
And if you want to play a game, anytime you drive past that, try to count how many mattresses are out front.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Nice count.
You can always get to at least four. So we're like with the meth hotels right there.
Oh,
like
yeah.
We're gonna get the cops called on us. it'll be great. It'll be a good production.
We're filming a movie. It's gonna be awesome. We'll give you killer like extra footage of the police rolling in if you need to use that.
Yeah, we'll just have to flash our fake cop badges for
them.
Like, hey, we're with you guys. We're with you guys.
Unified Police Department. We're just from a different district. It's okay.
Yeah. See how well that goes.
Yeah, they'll be like, impersonating a police officer. It's for a movie. It's okay. We're in character right now. It doesn't count.
I've never tried to use that excuse. I should. I'm just in character. I'm
just
in character.
I'm going method on this. It's all good.
One of the guys was reading our script, and because I went in and rewrote our script.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to get things a little dark.
Mm-hmm.
And he finishes reading it and just kind of goes, are you okay?
That's like my writing. I'm such a happy, fun person, and then I write something really depressing, and people are like, oh my god, Melissa, what's going on? It's like, it's called writing!
Well, the movie that we
That's what writers
the
do!
The news for, it's called The Narcissist.
Oh, nice.
And it's about a guy that, it was an essay I wrote for our book.
Oh, okay.
About a guy that's so narcissistic, he goes to speak at a self-help seminar and doesn't realize it's a self-help seminar. So he just instead speaks about how wonderful he is.
I love it.
So, and the news is because at the very end the guy kills himself.
Oh my gosh.
But all he's worried about is that there's somebody swinging in his spotlight.
Nice.
And so when we actually gave the script, one of the people that was supposed to be filming with us dropped out completely because she thought that we were making fun of suicide.
Oh my gosh.
And we were like, no, it's just dark comedy.
It's
all it is. It's fun.
Yeah.
To me, if you don't make people squirm sometimes,
yeah.
it's just not
then
not
you're just
it.
Not trying hard enough. People need to squirm.
So you do this first open mic, goes well. Second open mic, bombs. What gave you the confidence to keep going after that?
Addiction. Pure addiction to comedy. It's just so fun. It's like, and you can't stop. At least the way I am, like, if I go, like with that second one, if I go and it's bad or I don't get the reaction I want, I'm not happy until I do another show and get the reaction I want. So it's just a continual cycle of... And in the beginning, it was rough. I mean, stand-up comedy is not easy at all. So it was hard to find a way where I could hit every time or where I could at least not be nervous, you know, because I get nervous. And sometimes when I'm nervous, I just forget completely what I'm saying. And so that was one of the things that changed over time with my comedy that I was kind of proud of is... Because I'm a writer, so when I'd write stuff, I would get on stage and I would just go completely, like, scripted, you know,
right.
like acting, basically, like just delivering a monologue. And I got some feedback that was, like, pretty much the exact way I wrote. They're like, it just seems too prepared, it seems too scripted, you know, you need to go more with talking to the audience or interacting with them more because it seems too much like a movie. And I was like, oh, that's really good advice. And that was where... I brought into what I did learn from improv, you know, and like being able to like go with the audience and like, and once I did that, it made everything so much easier and I wasn't nervous because I wasn't afraid of people, you know, like throwing me off guard or forgetting what I was going to say because it's like, it's improv now,
right.
you know, but it's just me on the stage and I can deal with that. Improv with a lot of different people where they're like, you gotta guess what city I'm in. I can't do that kind of stuff. But if it's just me making up stuff, that's totally cool.
Awesome.
And that made me bond more with the audience, too. And it also made me, because you'll understand because you're a writer, like, when I was writing stuff at first, it wasn't necessarily me. It was just kind of characters. It was, you know, just other stuff. But then when I became more honest about my comedy and started interacting with the audience more, I could tell there's more of a connection there. And so that was just awesome. And that's why I like doing it to this day, is just to have that kind of connection with strangers or whoever.
Do you find, though, as with being a writer, even with the improv element, because I know the very limited amount of stand-up that I've done, I am so OCD.
Oh, yeah.
About making sure that I'm delivering it right. That, I mean, right now I have a whole chunk that, like, I've been like, okay, I need to get to open mic, and I'll practice it a couple days before, and I'm like, nope, I'm jumbling those words. It needs to be. And so it's like, I know, it's like, I just need to get there and bomb and take it and just let that be.
That's true. That's,
but do you find that it really gets in, that it gets in your head when you're doing that?
It does get in your head, and it gets in your head really bad, especially like after, because I'm the same way with like, like if I don't deliver a joke the exact way I want to deliver it, I'm mad. Or if I leave out some kind of element of the joke, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you have to just learn to let that side of it go, because it's on stage, it's real, you know? And it's a performance, and the thing is, the audience doesn't know. The audience doesn't know you wrote an extra, you know, line for that joke. The audience has no idea. So as long as they're entertained and they're having a good time with it, it's like, you just gotta let it go. Then you gotta be like, oh, next time I gotta do that. You know?
Yeah.
And then next time you'll forget. And then you'll be mad again, because that's my current thing. I've had this joke I've wanted to do, like, for my past three shows, and I remember the last show I did was at Club One, and I remember sitting there before I go up, and I'm like, I'm gonna tell it right at the end. I'm gonna remember this time. I forgot. I don't take notes on the stage with me. A lot of comedians do. Sometimes I have taken them up there, but
Mark Maron brings his entire
notebook. Yeah, exactly. And like, that kind of surprised me, because I did come from like theater background, so it's like, memorize your lines, you know, so you feel like you shouldn't have notes. But a lot of comedians do take big notebooks on stage, and I've done it a few times. But I've noticed even when I do it, I don't really look at them, so it's like, why even bother? But there's got to be some way for you to memorize stuff. Yeah. it's so hard. And I like to drink before the shows too. And if I drink too much, forget about it. My memory is gone. And then I get on stage and it's just like, hey, everybody, hi. And then whatever comes to mind is going to come out. That's about it.
But at least you know your bits well enough that even if that is the case, you've got it.
I do have.
You've got it down.
I have an autopilot for sure. But that's what's hard, is I go to the autopilot of like my old jokes and stuff. So then if I have new ones that I'm really excited about telling,
that's when
I forget. Yeah. And so then I'm like, oh, dang it, I was going to do that one tonight. So
it's funny that you mentioned too, like how, yeah, the audience doesn't know if you.
Yeah. Like you'll kill yourself. You'll be like, why did I forget? But nobody cares, you know,
I went and saw Jay Whitaker when I was out in L.A. He just happened to be coming to L.A. and I was thrilled, because I was like, finally, somebody from home, I get to see again. And they cut Jay's set slightly short, like the last minute.
Oh, no.
And so after the show, like he comes up to me and he's just like, man, and like I bombed. And we're like, no, you didn't.
Yeah,
like,
you did kill her.
It's like, I know your entire set, and that was great. Like, but he felt so
down.
And like one of my friends had even mentioned, oh, yeah, Tim said that he saw you out there. And he's like, did he tell you I bombed? She was like, no, because you
did great.
He said you did great.
That's
like,
the hard part. Exactly. Because in your mind, you feel different about it.
Yeah.
You know? But you got to look at it from the audience perspective. Because in your mind, you're going to be your worst critic all the time. And you're going to be like, I could have told that better. I could have delivered that better.
Yeah.
You know, I could have remembered that joke. But as long as the audience enjoys it and has fun, you know, you're fine.
That being said, though, I've shot movies where last minute I had to do lines, and
we
literally had the script sitting right here, so I'd read it and then quickly do the sign and look back down and read it.
And consult the script. Do we have a prompter?
Hey, if Marlon Brando could do it, so can I, right?
Exactly, why not?
Do you know there's scenes of The Godfather where, like, I have a book that goes through, like, and breaks down a ton of The Godfather, where he was eating Chinese food during, like, right before the shot, and he just like ducked it down because
table.
The shot was just like at his chest up.
That's
and so
great.
He's holding a container of Chinese food underneath, and then as soon as they cut the shot, he just went right back to eating.
Oh, that's awesome. How impressive is that? Is this all the way?
Can you see my lo mein?
I don't want to stop eating.
It's still steaming, it starts fogging up the lenses.
That's awesome.
He's talking to Michael salivating. So now, I know you have a lot of shows coming up right now. I saw you post some for, is it Comedy Roadkill at the Complex?
Comedy Roadkill, and I would encourage you to come to this. I'm going to be hosting the open mic.
Okay.
So, if you want to come try out some stuff. And I'm doing it kind of as my birthday party show.
Yeah, I saw that.
When you're a comedian, everybody you know wants to try comedy, you know. So this is a perfect opportunity to try and get some of my friends out to, you know, get on stage for a little while. It's at the Complex, which is a really fun room to do. It's just over 21, little bar, and it's free. So Tuesday, November 19th is when I'm doing that, and it starts at 8 p.m. It's going to be really fun. And I am encouraging people if they want to roast me as well, because...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That also encourages people to get on stage. I'm like, even if you don't feel like you want to try comedy yet, why don't you come out and, you know, make fun of me?
This will be a good way, too, to get those family members and those coworkers.
Oh, totally.
They come up to you and give the, hey, you know what you should add to your rap?
Oh, my God, yeah. Or they'd say some terrible thing to you, and then they're like, you can use that. It's like, oh, thank you.
You're like, yeah, no. Not, no.
That's always so bad.
As Jordan and I were writing our TV pilot that we've kind of been shopping, my hairstylist at the time would always, every time I'd go in to get my haircut, you know what you should pitch?
Yeah.
And I'd spend 20 minutes sitting
there
being like, no,
what is it?
I shouldn't pitch that.
I know,
no.
You're like, I know you're just going to tell me anyway.
Yeah, I almost wanted to sit down in the chair each time and be like, so what do you got for me today?
I know, like, why don't you just talk to me, because... I'm not going to get a word in edgewise. I know you got all these great ideas.
Yeah, and those people crack me up, though. And a lot of the times, I'll take some of it just to make fun of the character based on
them. Oh, yeah,
later.
No, totally, totally. I did that for one of my coworkers because, you know, the employee bathroom, right?
Yeah.
So I go in the bathroom, and I guess she was coming in behind me. So she's in the stall next to me, and then I just hear this, hey, do you do comedy? I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like the most inappropriate time to ask me about my comedy. I'm like, yes, actually I do. And I wish I would have been more prepared and had like a card like on me, you know, to like slip under the stall. Like, check out my website, melissamerlot.com. Like, hand it to that would have been so smooth, but...
You should have just said yes, paused for a minute, and then been like, can you spare a square?
Can you spare a square?
And see if she would have even caught the reference.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, you've been doing comedy for from what I hear, 5 years, but it's really longer.
5 years is my default. My bad mouth. My bad math rounding skills. Yeah, I started doing... God, when did... I think the first time I ever did comedy was 2005. And then, like, with me going to that one open mic, doing good, going to the next one, bombing. Then I went to a couple other open mics, and then I just kind of stopped. Because I was working at night, and I just didn't have any time to get to them. And so I didn't really do it for a year after that. It was just kind of sporadic. And then in 2006, I got more into it again. And so, yeah, it's been since then. 5 years.
now, with all those shows that you did over that 5 years from 2005 to 2013, who has been the your favorite person, somebody that you idolized that you were able to open for, that you know really kind of changed your course of your comedy?
Doug Stanhope, totally. Opening for him, I mean, he already was an inspiration and everything, but getting to open for him when he shot his Showtime special here at the Complex, that was the coolest.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know
that. That was really, really cool. And he signed a poster for me after the show, you know. I was totally like fangirl. I'm like, I'm such a big... I mean, he already knew me because he came here and did comedy forever ago. But I was like, will you sign this? This is so great. I got to open for you. Oh my gosh. And he signed it and he wrote on it, I'm drunk. Or he wrote, Melissa, I'm drunk, but I love you. And so I have that framed in my apartment because that was like big honor, you know? Like, that's so cool.
That is really
but
cool.
But yeah, I love Doug Stanhope. I think he's amazing.
Who else have you had a chance to open for?
Karen Rontowski is a huge idol of mine. She's hilarious. It sounds kind of silly, but female comedians are kind of hard. Like, sometimes they're just they're either one way or the other, mm-hmm. and it's just hard to find ones that I can actually connect with. But she just has the best, like, observational type humor and social commentary. So I opened for her at the Egyptian Theater in Park City, and that was just great. Like, and being able to become friends with her, like, after that, like, we still stay in touch and everything, and she has given me, like, so much help and guidance, and she's also into ghost hunting, which is really cool.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, Karen Rontowski, you should look her up. She's awesome. She was on David Letterman, I think last year, I can't remember, but
yeah, and that definitely, do you find that difficult being one of the few female comics? I mean, not just in Salt Lake City, but I mean, there's just not a big group of female comics.
Yeah, no, it for sure is difficult. And there's also, you face all kinds of stereotypes, you know, like, yeah. Oh, well, the girls here, you know, or something. Yeah. You're like, sorry. Like, but it does work in your favor, too, because a lot of times people, when they book shows, they want to kind of, you know, add some diversity or have a female. So it can work for you as well. And I've had that happen a lot. Like, oh, well, do you guys have a girl? You know?
Yeah.
And so then you get a show, it's just because you're a girl. But it's like, hey, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Use whatever you can. So that's nice.
So now I heard that you had, you know, been able to do some open mics and stuff outside of the state, out at the Comedy Store. Mm-hmm. How do you feel the difference really was out at the Comedy Store compared to, or even just California in general, mm-hmm. compared to being in Salt Lake doing open mic?
Oh, it was kind of fun. Just, I think you get kind of used to where you always perform, you
right.
know? And so when I did the show, when I did the Comedy Store one in California, and then I also did a show at Sunset Stages out there with Dean Evans, who's a comedian that's from here but moved to California.
Okay.
And then Dan Bylack got me that show, and he's a hilarious stand-up comedian too. And doing that show, like, afterwards, I've noticed that afterwards when you do the shows out of state, because I always bring up that I'm from Utah, and I always kind of talk about it, because I write these Mormon jokes, but I'm scared to do them in Salt Lake because I deal with a lot of, you know, current LDS or ex-LDS, and you don't, you know, you want to tread lightly sometimes, but then I'm like, oh, I can do this in another state, you know? And then, so when I did them out there, I only had a couple jokes about the LDS, and they weren't bad or anything, but then after the show, it's like, they just plow you for information. They're like, what's it like? Like, can you do see polygamous? Like, and this is before, you know, Sister Wives and stuff was on the air, because that probably cleared up a lot of stuff. But, but yeah, it was just kind of fun to have them so inquisitive about, you know, the Mormon faith, because they think that's all Utah is in a lot of other places, you know. So
it's funny, and I think I've talked about it on here before about the great misconception people have of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, aside just from, you know, whether they think it's all Mormons and everybody has, well, everybody does have 50 kids, but that they're all, you know, just from, you know, from like several different moms and whatnot, and that they all think we wear denim and
or like total hillbillies, like hillbilly Mormons.
So it's funny. I mean, as I was living in LA, and I mean, I'm actually planning to move back to LA in a few months here, but like, I'd bump into people, and they'd be like, so you're from Utah?
Mm-hmm.
And they would try to get into things, and I'm like, whoa, no, like, that's not me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
no.
I know. They just bring up, like, everything they've ever heard about Utah. It's like, I'm not, like, the tourist bureau. I don't.
Yeah, they'd be like, so how many kids do you have? I'm like, none. I hate kids. I've got two cats, though. Like,
they're like, isn't it mandatory for people in Utah to have children? You're like, you would think. If
you're like, yeah, you get a
like
handstand.
It's mandatory.
Granted, when we first moved back to Utah,
mm-hmm.
I didn't realize, like, really how many kids there were. Because it's like, you know, you'd be out at a Target in, like, Burbank.
Oh,
And it's like, there'd be
there's children.
A couple of kids.
Yeah, not, like, moms.
But I never noticed them. And then, like, I got home, and I go to Target out here,
mm-hmm.
and I thought they were going to kick me out because I didn't have at least 5 kids with me before noon. I was
like,
so
I
out
know,
of place.
I'm here alone.
I mean, it was like ladies' morning at Target, and I should not have been there by any means.
This is the housewives shopping time.
Yeah.
We are only allowed to shop.
That, I didn't realize how predominantly white Utah really was.
Oh my god, yes.
Until I moved back.
Oh yeah.
And that was a culture shock.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like people always joke about, you know, wanting to, like, apologize. I really did want to start apologizing to people. Like, that was so weird.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get every ethnicity throughout Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and then come back, it's like, I grew up here.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That shouldn't be that way. But I'm sure you've experienced that as is, because, I mean, as you mentioned, when you're on I Am Salt Lake, you know, being a non-Mormon with red hair.
I was a minority in my elementary school. Is that crazy?
That's
because we had no diversity. It was all white people.
That absolutely.
So the redhead was the minority. The funny thing was, my two friends were two adopted girls from Bolivia. Because they had dark skin. So it was me and the two dark-skinned girls in elementary school. Because we were the minority.
They were
Mormon, though. Oh. I was not. So I was a double minority.
I mean, it's a good thing that it was Salt Lake and not Arizona. Otherwise, it would have been like, she's a redhead and we need to see their papers.
Yeah, exactly. Then we would have been separated. So at least we had each other.
So now, as far as podcasting goes, you do three different podcasts, is that right?
Yes, actually.
So you have The Awkward Hour.
The Awkward Hour with Brian Staker.
The Left Show.
The Left Show is awesome.
And then your own show.
Liberal Agenda, my own show that I'm very lazy about. It's called Conspiracy Theory Podcast, and it's spelled not like conspiracy, but spelled like conspiracy with a purr in the middle, like a cat, because I wear a cat mask to conceal my identity.
That's funny.
But I'll tell you guys right now, it's really me.
It's like Mr. X on The Simpsons.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like. And it is available on iTunes. I will be recording more, so please subscribe to it. I promise I'll be doing more.
Now, to the few you've already done, what conspiracies have you gone over?
I've gone over Plum Island and their secret experiments.
What is that? I've never heard of Plum Island.
It's like where Lyme disease allegedly came from. They had Nazi scientists who... they recruited to do research on different ways to transmit diseases. And one of them was to put diseases in ticks. And then, you know, the ticks would, like, spread to people. And then you would get the disease that way. And so
this is really all weird.
A theory that... 'cause one of the ideas that came from Plum Island. Because it started showing up... really close to Plum Island. And then, what other ones did I do? I did one on zombies and how they're working on a zombie virus based on the rabies virus. That's my most popular one so far. And then, of course, I did one on Paul McCartney not being alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They think they killed off Paul McCartney, yes. And that this is a lookalike, yeah.
That was my first one, was Fall is his name for fake Paul. So that was my first one. And it's not to really, like, prove any of the conspiracies, it's just discussion. So it's still for comedy. And I'm going to be doing an alien one, that'll be my next one, because I have a kid's book that's written by an alien abductee. Oh. And it's a picture book. So it's got pictures of the kids playing with the aliens, and they're the Greys, like the big, scary, like black eyes.
Like, I think it'd be fun just to write a satire of that if the alien touched my no-no.
Yeah, exactly. Why does the alien bad touch me? It's like those kids' books helping children cope with, like, you know, difficult situations.
Did his finger light up?
Ow.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a different ET. It's not ow, it's woo.
Oh, wow, you can hear one of my cats meowing. Yep. It wants
kitties.
In here.
Kitties are the best.
That's the cat's first debut on the podcast.
Oh, welcome, kitty.
There they go.
Good to have you on.
Yeah, they think they need to be with us at all given times.
Of course.
They're like dogs.
They're cats.
they're cats, but they're like
they're
dogs.
They're like dogs. They have to follow you around.
Yeah. Like, I had jokingly started whistling a song for one of them.
Uh-huh.
And now she will come running at any given time and just, like, trot behind me like I'm, like, the Pied Piper.
Oh, that's so cute.
It is the funniest thing in the entire world.
That's cute. Animals are the best.
So now one conspiracy that I think would be funny for you uh-huh. to do with the Left Show.
Yes.
Is a whole thing with the Obamacare site.
Oh my gosh.
Have you heard the conspiracy on this?
No, tell me.
The conspiracy that I've been hearing on this, uh-huh. and I thought it was funny because I actually thought this the day that it launched, and they're like, it doesn't work.
Oh yeah, because it was malfunctioning yeah. like crazy.
But there's now a conspiracy out there that the Tea Party people have a... have their own hackers that have brought
it down. Oh, like sabotaging you. Oh, those Tea Party hackers.
And when I thought that, I was like, I could totally see this. Rupert Murdoch's back there, like jerking off on a hard drive or something and being like, take that!
Obama! That's awesome.
So, and then when I heard that there was actually a conspiracy, I was just like, oh, wow. Like, that was just like a really messed up corner of my brain that went there.
That is pretty good. I like it.
Yeah, supposedly they're doing it in the Watergate Hotel, so...
Oh, perfect!
But that'd be a funny one to mix in with the Left Show.
That would be really good. I could do a little cross-promotion there. Yeah.
Now, how did you get involved with the Left Show?
We had the guys from the Left Show on the Awkward Hour.
Okay.
And they were really cool. They were really fun on that one. And then a while later, they asked me if I wanted to come on and be a guest, and I was like, yes, absolutely, and they wanted to just kind of add, like, a female, again, like, it working for you, mm-hmm. being a woman, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is great, and I went out there, and I was kind of worried, because I'm really not that into politics, but I'm into conspiracy, you yeah. know, so I'm like, well, I'm kind of, like, in the know, but not really in the factual way, and, but then, when I went out there, they were just so much fun, and, they email out all the links so I actually could follow what stories we're talking about. Thank God.
And they're like, download the Huffington Post app. Yeah, exactly. You'll be good.
Exactly. Just give me something to reference and I'm good. And so it was so much fun. And then we all had such a good time. They just kept me coming back. So I was really happy about that.
That's cool. And now at the Awkward Hour, I haven't had a chance to really check that mm-hmm. out. But I love the name of it.
Yeah.
Now, is it... Tell me a little bit about what the Awkward Hour is. Is it like with Pete Holmes, he has You Made It Weird, where he likes to just get things weird and...
The Awkward Hour is just awkward, because Brian Staker has Asperger's, and so that's why he created the podcast called The yeah. Awkward Hour. It's just kind of like, I don't know, to like introduce the way he is, and then... He's really into art, so he likes interviewing artists and stuff like that. So he just brought me on the show as a sidekick. Again, the female thing, because yeah. he wanted somebody who would be like Robin to like Howard Stern, to like make him, you know, funnier than he mm-hmm. is and laugh at him and stuff. And so I went on the show. I didn't know him before we started doing the show, and he brought me on the show when he was putting it on Utah FM. And so that was the first time I did it, and he's really funny and easy to laugh at, because I didn't know anything about Asperger's before I started working with him.
I like the way
now we get along great. Yeah, now we get along great. He's really smart. I mean, yeah. that's the thing about people with Asperger's. You know, they have this just, like, wealth of knowledge yeah. in their brain, and they can recall anything, but... It's just that
I'm an old roommate
you can't
that
read
Asperger's.
Their like body yeah. language at all, and that's why it makes them so awkward. Is it's just so strange. But yeah, it's been really fun, and we interview some really cool people. So
that's cool.
And I'm not always with him. He does it every Monday night, and you can find it on theawkwardhour.com, and then the Left Show is theleftshow.com as well. So. Two to check out, and then Conspiracy Theories on iTunes, and also on Ustream, because it's a video podcast as well.
Oh, okay.
Hence the cat mask.
I love that you wear a cat mask. That is just amazing.
That's why it's called Conspiracy.
it's I think it's Katy Perry that has her she calls her cat
Kitty Purry.
Yeah, Kitty Purry. And so that's actually what, like, my wife has some of her perfume, and, uh-huh. and it's a cat-shaped
I love
bottle.
That bottle. I know exactly and, yeah, what you're Kitty talking Purry. About. I saw that bottle, and I was like, what is this?
It's not as crazy as the Nicki Minaj one, though, that has, like, the pink hair and comes down over a bust.
I would have a nightmare about that perfume bottle if I bought it and had it in my bathroom. I couldn't do it.
Anytime you'd get up to pee and that's all.
Yeah, it's, like, staring at me. I'm scared of dolls and stuff, and that's just, it's too creepy. I'd have to sleep with it in a cage or something. It's too scary. Too scary, Nicki Minaj.
You have to lock it up.
I would, dude. Remember that story with the doll and the really long fingernails at night? You had to keep it in the cage. Oh, that's like the Nicki Minaj perfume bottle to me.
It makes my brain go to The Simpsons when Homer realizes that they had a wedding cake in the freezer.
Yes.
And he thinks that the little characters are going to come to life. So he closes the freezer door and then just opens it. Ha!
Totally what it's like.
Now, one last thing I wanted to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, you know, with being a writer, I understand you have a poetry book.
I do have a poetry book.
So tell me about this poetry book.
And it's called Firewalk. I wrote it in 2006. You can get it on barnesandnoble.com. You can download it to the Nook or whatever. I'm going to move it to amazon.com because there's a way you can make them free for a few days.
Yes.
And that's what I want to do. And
we have a lot of experience in giving away free books.
I'm sure you do. The yearbook. You know all about the Amazon.com.
Yeah, I think at this point we've given away more free copies than we've sold.
That's okay, though, because it gets it out there, you know? So I really want to do that. And I originally wrote it just to get all my poetry together because I was doing poetry before comedy. And I just kind of gave it away to, like, friends and family, you know. But it did start selling, and people started liking it. So that was a good thing. And I want to start giving it out at comedy shows, just to be random. I have had a few comedians buy it just to taunt me. They're like, you wrote poetry? I gotta read this! I mean, it's like a $2 book, you know?
It's like on Parks and Rec when they find out that Ron's Duke Silver.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, we gotta get some of this.
This is your Duke Silver.
Yeah, comedians love to tease each other, so that's a good thing. But yeah, so I for sure want to give it out.
So now you said barnesandnoble.com and then hopefully soon Amazon?
Hopefully soon Amazon.com.
Okay.
And watch melissamerlot.com for details. I'll put it on there.
Awesome. So, and then, with Nook or even Kindle. Mm-hmm. I know Kindle works. Works great for giving it away.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to know who has our book now at this point.
Yeah.
Well, we tweeted out a
they
ton.
They should be reviewing it.
To like tons of different celebrities. Because we want celebrities to have this.
Yeah.
And realize that, you know, we're really messed up.
Uh-huh.
And after I tweeted out a ton to different celebrities, those were the main ones that like I directed a link to.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think a bunch of them have it.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So we're
they
like,
better.
Please let
review.
Them download.
At least tweet about it, celebrities.
Yeah,
come
on. Michael Ian Black actually responded to me about it. And that like
love
made
Michael
our
Ian Black.
Day.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Because, I mean, we had read his book, My Custom Van.
Oh, it's so good.
And that's what inspired Jordan to kind of start stuff.
Cool.
And so for us to like tweet him and be like, hey, here's a free copy of our book.
Uh-huh.
You know, you inspired this. And for him to respond and be like, well, hey, great, good luck with it.
Oh, that's
like,
so cool.
Wow, like,
so
that's not
cool.
Even, like, it was crazy.
That is awesome.
But yeah, I think especially with poetry, poetry's just fun in general.
Yeah. So it's good stuff.
Is it comedic poetry?
Not
or
at all. It's all human emotions compared to elements in nature. So it's very transcendental.
Cool. Hey, that's
the line of poetry I was very interested in. But I can't remember the name of the movie. I did the cover myself and I was so proud of it. And then I found out that it's really similar to this guy's cape in this horrible B movie. I can't remember the name of it. It's like one of the worst B movies ever. And I saw the cape and I was like, oh no. Because it's like a hand or two hands and two eyes, like peeking through the hands. And so this guy has it on the back of his cape. It's really similar. No, it's like an older. It's got a guy who's like a goat, like a half goat. For all you listeners, here's a project.
A half goat man with a cape.
It's not not him. His like owner is the one that has the cape.
I was excited here.
It would be cool if it was the goat guy.
My wife would have like looked through my browsing
like
history
or
something and been like,
"Hands of Manos
or
something."
Goats with capes.
I think it's called Hands of Manos. I can't remember. It's some crazy name, but it was so close to the cover. And when I saw that, I was like, "Oh, maybe I should change my cover." And then I'm like, "Nah, I love bad movies." It's a perfect tie-in.
Well, I'll have to check that out. So, well, thank you so much for taking the time
to
come down today.
Like, this was great.
Like we said, this has been a little while in the
making. Yeah,
so.
I've been looking forward to it. So this was good.
So and people can find you on Twitter.
Yes, Facebook, MelissaMerlot.com. All the links are right there.
Perfect.
Including my podcast links and stuff. So. I'll put one up to this, too.
So, and then Comedy Roadkill / Your Birthday Party
on
November 19th.
Yep, November 19th, 8 p.m., and it's free.
Any other shows after that?
That's the only one I have coming up right now, so.
Okay. Well, perfect. Well, again, thank you so much. So hopefully it doesn't snow as you are heading back.
I'm such a wuss about driving in the snow.
No, I work at X96 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And as I had driven down there the other morning, it was like just a little wet outside.
Mm-hmm.
And like right as I hit like the off ramp,
is it just like blizzard?
Just a blizzard.
I hate
and
that.
I was just like, no.
That's what I hate.
And right now too. One of my car's back brakes doesn't
work. Oh, that's exactly what you want. It's the snowy weather. There's
like,
no brakes. Who needs them?
Like, I was crying for like the last like five blocks. And I was just
That's what weather's like in Utah, though. It's like, you'll be fine. It'll just be a little tiny bit of snow. And then you take an exit or something. And it's just blizzard. Just like Antarctica. You can't see anything.
So hopefully that doesn't hit or anything on the way back.
I'll
so
be good.
You'll be good.
I'll be good on my way back.
All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you next week.
See ya.